Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and legendary radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Splendid Periodic Table Show. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, special radio wave to the faculty and staff at the MSU Ronald G. Eaglin Space Science Center. Shelley Irving, for the second week in a row, is investigating the large sinkhole that has opened up near the Isonville Zoo. But here, because I couldn't keep him out, from the University of Kentucky, the Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, Rick Phillips, to explain to you how to access Health Matters on the Internet.
Hey, Tony, you know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org, Moorhead State Public Radio's website. Find the Health Matters link. It's buried in there somewhere. There's a menu system. And get a list of the shows. Get a little short summary on each show. But most importantly, there is a link to the MP3 file. You can listen to it over and over. After that, you've become infuriated. You absolutely have to vent. The interactive way to get a hold of the show is facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Thank you, Rick. Our sponsor for today's show, the Periodic Table.
But you said it's the Splendid Periodic Table.
I'm putting, you know.
Are you putting a sugar substitute in there?
No,
is that
this
what we're
is
doing?
The NPR show, which not necessarily on this station, but on many NPR stations, they have the Splendid Table. It turns out is the 150th anniversary of the, how you would call it, the invention, the discovery of the periodic table.
Do you remember what that was like when they created that?
I was thinking about that. I actually had to look up. I remembered Avogadro's number.
Okay.
6.02 times 10 on the 23rd. Right. I mean, anybody that worked in chemistry.
Anybody that has Google could look that up.
Yeah, but I actually knew that, but I was trying to remember how you take the atomic weight times Avogadro's number, and that's a mole. And you don't go around saying, well, if you got a mole of salt, you know, it's not like that. You say
to go along with your pie?
Yeah, you just don't do that sort of thing. But still,
just a little joke for a mathematician there.
Right. So I will take that back. Our sponsors, we'll talk about the periodic table in a minute, but our sponsor is calcium. That the symbol is Ca. It's one of the alkaline earth metals of group 2
California.
On the periodic table.
It's California. Ca.
It is the most abundant metallic element in the human body. So we've got to talk about it if we're celebrating the periodic table. And the fifth most abundant element in the Earth's crust. Atomic number 20, atomic weight 40.078. That times Avogadro's number will give you a mole of calcium. Not that you would want a mole of calcium. It sounds like a disease, doesn't it? But we're talking about calcium, and this comes from the Cleveland Clinic, 7 Tips for Healthy Bones.
Not 6, not 8,
no, they,
7.
Cleveland Clinic wrote this one, so they stopped at 7.
So apparently there isn't 8 tips.
I would assume not. Number 1, eat lots of vegetables. They're the best source of vitamin C, which stimulates bone-forming cells. Greens and yellows help people with bone mineralization.
I mean, really, honestly, that's just good business on anything.
Yeah, it is. You know, I was thinking, and what's interesting is they don't mention dairy.
Okay.
They mention eating.
So what you're saying is you got to eat your vegetables without the vegetable dip.
Yeah, I guess so. But you would think if you're looking for calcium, of course, milk and dairy products have calcium. But to stimulate the bone cells, you need the yellows and green vegetables. And number 2, and I agree with this completely, is perform strength training, especially from problems like knee and hip arthritis.
So when do you do your strength training?
I've got a weight machine in my basement, which I need to use more. You know, if I'm not out on the farm.
So, okay, have you used it this year?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Really? You moved it somewhere? From one room of the house? Did you move it to the other room of the house?
It does occasionally have my raincoat on it. I'll give you that. Start by performing, says Christopher Travers, who is an exercise physiologist. Perform 1 or 2 sets of 10 to 12 repetitions, working to muscle fatigue. I think if you're older, what I would say is just do something. I think especially those of us in our 60s, 70s, 80s, if you are just lifting something, it's going to be good. And as far as working to muscle fatigue and increasing your intensity, just try to get yourself moving. Tip number 3 is add vitamin D to your day to help absorb calcium. You need 1,000 to 2,000 international units of vitamin D daily. Combined calcium vitamin D pills don't usually meet this requirement, and most of us who live north of Atlanta don't get enough vitamin D through the sun. So they do recommend a vitamin D supplement for those in Kentucky and parts north. Take that, you Canadian listeners. Get some vitamin D. Literally, take that. Start weight-bearing exercise, an activity that forces you to move against gravity or resistance. High-impact weight-bearing exercises are best for building bones, but your joints may not tolerate them as well. But staying in motion is a good idea. We'll stop with tip number 4 from the Cleveland Clinic for Healthy Bones. And that's our sponsor, Calcium, one of the alkaline earth metals of group 2 on the periodic table. Now, a little bit about the periodic table. The reason we have titled this show The Splendid Periodic Table is that the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization has proclaimed 2019 the year of the periodic table. You put some reverb on that, Brian. The year of the periodic table.
But, you know, the periodic table is not about time. It's about weight.
It is about weight. And finish that sentence, Rick.
No,
where are you going with this?
You did it. You took over. It's all yours, buddy.
I can't see where you're going with this. One of the most significant achievements in science, not only chemistry, but physics and biology, a unique tool. And the thing about the periodic table that's really cool.
It's not square?
I have 10 fun facts about the periodic table.
Wow.
Fun fact number 1, Dmitry Mendeleev, often cited as the inventor, but he was the first one to gain scientific credibility. I did read that he was not aware of other people's efforts at doing this. I mean, it appeared to a number of scientists that there was, when you look at the properties of these metals, they seem to recur as you rank them according to their atomic weights. You could see the properties recurring at regular intervals. That's the periodic part of the periodic table. The group, the properties of one element are very similar to the one above it or the one below it if you put them in lines according to their weight. So the right side of the table is different than the left side.
I just find it kind of fascinating that 150 years ago we were able to finally see things at the atomic level.
Yeah.
To be able to see you know, what the atomic makeup is, so you could determine how many new,
And Mendeleev, to his credit, I mean, he predicted that they would discover some of the heavier ones that they hadn't yet discovered. He corrected the atomic weights of some because he saw that they weren't in the right spot on the table for their properties. And so he was using this thing when other people were not even sure that it was true. Fun fact number 2, the International Union of Pure and Applied Chemistry, IUPAC. You know, and UK played them in the preseason. You may remember Travis Reed wasn't available.
Reed Travis,
sorry.
You do what most people do. They like to put his first and last name
next. They revise it as new data becomes available. Last time revision, November 2016. Fun fact number 3, there are 90 elements that occur in nature. All the other elements are man-made. The present periodic table has room for 118 elements. Scientists right now are working on and creating and verifying element 120, which will obviously now push the table beyond 118 and change the look of it. Fun fact number 5, technetium, the first element to be made artificially, and it has radioactive isotopes. As a matter of fact, you may remember, Rick, we used technetium in some of our
all the nuclear medicine scans, right?
Yep. Used to.
I mean, they still don't use it much anymore?
No.
It had a fairly short half-life, right? I mean, it would kind of...
In other words, we would make you radioactive, but only for a brief period of time when we could look on the camera.
You weren't allowed to have friends for 3, 4, 5 days.
Yeah. Fun fact number 6, the rows of the periodic table are called periods. An element's period number is the highest unexcited energy level for the electron of that element. So those of you listening to our show, this is probably your unexcited state wherever you are.
So my daughter, you know, was in the space science program here at MSU. Mm-hmm. And in her home when she was living here off campus, her shower curtain was one big periodic table. It was pretty funny.
That's cool.
No, it was actually pretty cool.
I don't have a periodic table in my house. And I suppose for
2019, don't have a table in your house.
I should get one. Atomic number, number of protons in the nucleus, atomic mass, number of protons and neutrons. You've got your neutrons. You've got your positive charge protons. And then you got your amateur trons that they get charged full price everywhere they go. So anyway, whatever.
Good joke.
Thank you.
Little periodic table joke there.
There you go. That's it. We're done. Main difference between the modern table and Mendeleev's periodic table is that his arranged them in order of increasing atomic weight, while modern tables use the atomic number for their periods, their rows. So that is the fun facts about the periodic table. This is, in fact, according to UNESCO, the year of the periodic table. That's why we did that. Rick, I'm going to read you something. This comes from the Morbidity and Mortality weekly report.
Okay.
And it relates to iron. Iron, symbol FE, atomic number 26, group 8, period 4
A metal. Ferrous metal.
A ferrous metal.
Right?
Yeah. Well, and it's about rusty nails, but you'll see it's not entirely about rusty nails. I'll just read the story. March 8th, 2019, Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report. 2017, a boy aged 6 years had received no immunizations, sustained a forehead laceration. He basically had a cut on his forehead playing outdoors on a farm. They cleaned the wound, and then they sutured it at home. Got your attention, didn't I?
No comment.
They sewed the wound up at home.
I live with a surgeon.
Yeah, that is not what you do.
Nope, you're right about that.
6 days later, he had episodes of crying, his jaw was clenching, involuntary upper extremity muscle spasms. He began arching his back and neck. We call that opisthotonus. Generalized spasticity, difficulty breathing. They contacted emergency services. He was air transported to a tertiary pediatric medical center. He had tetanus.
Wow.
No rusty nails, no puncture wounds. It was just a laceration, but they did sew it shut. And he had not had any vaccinations of any kind. Arrival at the hospital, jaw muscle spasms. He was alert, wanted water, couldn't open his mouth to drink. Developed respiratory distress because of his diaphragm in spasm and his voice box in spasm. He wound up going on a breathing machine. They gave him tetanus immune globulin. That is, you know, they gave him the protein that fights tetanus. Diphtheria and tetanus toxoids and a vaccine administered. He was admitted to the pediatric ICU, cared for in a darkened room with earplugs because every sound, every light would set him into these painful muscle spasms. He started on IV antibiotics. He developed temperatures of 105, continuous intravenous medication to control the spasms and the pain. Had to cut a hole in his throat because he had to be on a breathing machine for several weeks. On hospital day 35, 1 month and 5 days or so into that, he was able to, they were able to stop his IV medicines. And on day 44, he came off the breathing machine. On day 47, transferred out of the intensive care unit. 3 days later, walked 20 feet with assistance. And finally, on day 54, they showed shut the hole in his windpipe that they made for the breathing machine and transferred to a rehab center for 17 days. 57 days of inpatient care over a laceration on the forehead and a lack of vaccination. We're going to pick up the story when you come back for your second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the splendid Periodic Table Show. We are celebrating the 150th anniversary of Dmitri Mendeleev producing the first periodic table. And it came to him in a dream. He was asleep, and it came to him in a dream that the elements arranged themselves in rows, and he realized if you did that, that the columns, the ones in columns, would behave similarly chemically. It was brilliant.
Yeah, but Tony, you know, when we first, well, I don't know if we said we first met. When I first started liking you, maybe was a better term. You told me you used a phrase, intuitively obvious.
Yes.
Not everybody gets things that are intuitively obvious. A lot of IT guys do that, and that's why they talk and you can't understand them. And that's why doctors have it and you can't understand them. It's that ability to do that. It's something you look at it, and it's the matrix.
Yeah. And so at this point, he had this dream, and he realized that the periodic table could, first of all, predict where we should look for new elements, and then secondly, predict the chemical behaviors and chemical reactions of any compound discovered if you ranked it by its atomic weight. Some of them very promiscuous. They will interact with anything. And others, particularly the noble gases, they in fact will not interact with anything at all. Sponsor for the second time, 7 Tips for Healthy Bones. This is calcium. And again, calcium Ca, one of the alkaline earth metals, group 2A, atomic number 20, atomic weight 40.078. We were talking about how to get more calcium into your bones. First, eat lots of vegetables, particularly greens and yellows. Second, perform strength training. Weightlifting is what we are talking about. Third, add vitamin D to your day. And they just say, if you're north of Atlanta, you will not get enough sunshine to meet your body's needs for vitamin D. You should use supplements.
Or go to Florida.
Right. Supplements should be 1,000 to 2,000 international units daily. Number four, start weight-bearing exercises. Now, this means these are exercises that forces you to move against gravity or resistance. High-impact weight-bearing exercises are best for building bones. These are things like walking and running, but they may, in fact, affect your joints. They also mention stair climbing, dancing, and tennis and basketball. Number five, don't smoke. And once again, don't drink excessively. They just won't say don't drink. You really should not drink. I mean, if we're talking about your health, let's not mince words. Alcohol is not healthy.
Well, I mean, we don't have any trouble saying try to stay away from the double cheeseburger.
Right.
It is funny how we do that.
Don't drink excessively. What were you thinking? Number six, get your bone mineral density tested. There is something called a DEXA scan. It's a bone densitometry scan, a simple x-ray test. Measures the bone density, helps determine your risk of osteoporosis and fractures. They are recommending every woman within 2 years of menopause be tested with this bone density test. Number seven, consider medication. And again, hormone therapy they mention. I am not fond of hormone therapy. I've had it with it, increased risk of stroke, increased risk of blood clots, and of breast cancer. But in certain circumstances, even then, maybe beneficial. Bisphosphonates are the big ones. These are the ones that you take either once a week or daily, and they are supposed to help you build back bones. And that's really literally the backbone of bone building is the bisphosphonates. Back to our story. Again, when we left this six-year-old young man in 2017, he had been in the hospital for 57 days, $800,000, excluding the air transportation, which could easily add another $50,000 to $100,000. He was 1 month later, because he is a six-year-old, returned to normal activities, running and bicycling. Despite extensive review of risk and benefits, the parents, again, on discharge, refused to get the second dose of tetanus vaccine or any other recommended vaccination. Now, the reason I brought this up is because most people think of tetanus as something you get from rusty nails. And it is a rusty nail or a clean nail. It doesn't matter.
But let's be honest. This is why guys are always in the ER once every 10 years getting a tetanus shot.
Right.
The
rusty way it's
nail.
Supposed to work is you get that initial tetanus series, and then we vaccinate adults on the tens. At age 40, 50, 60, 70, you are supposed to get a tetanus booster. And one of those times, we add acellular pertussis. We call it the grandparent shot. When you are going to be around infants, in addition to the tetanus, we just go ahead and give you the pertussis, the whooping cough vaccine, with the tetanus shot. But most men, as Rick is mentioning, never make it to 10 years. Because if you have any type of a puncture wound, if you have something that closes over, and keep in mind, they sutured this laceration shut at home. When you have a wound that closes over, Clostridium tetanide loves that sort of thing. That's exactly where it wants to be. It loves growing there. It grows for a while, then it dies, and it produces a toxin. And that toxin produces the muscle spasms that make your jaws lock up. Tetanus called lockjaw when we were young, and gave this young man fits with all those muscle spasms that he had every time somebody made a noise. He's got to get these shots. Rusty nails, the article I saw in the Popular Science, they said, how did this get associated with rusty nails? There's nothing to do with rust. It's not an iron problem. It's not a rusty iron problem. It's not an oxidized iron problem. It is just a thing. Three shots and a booster every 10 years, 100% effective at preventing tetanus.
But it's hard to step on a nail that's new.
Yeah. if you have a scratch, we don't tend to vaccinate for an abrasion or a scratch. But if there is a cut and that cut closes up, or if there's a puncture wound and that puncture wound closes over, you could get tetanus. And the vaccine is the way to treat that, not by any type of fancy wound care.
You know, Tony, the cool thing is between, you know, I just turned 50 last year. And so between my 40 and 50, I guess I actually need to get a tetanus shot. I went 10 years. Go figure.
You know, and that is a testimonial to laziness, Rick.
Well,
because if you were doing the things you should have been doing, you would have done something stupid in the past 10 years.
I think I might make you feel bad when I say, you know, since like 2015, all I do is work, sleep, and study my homework.
Rick is pursuing advanced degrees.
So
outside
I don't spend
of the area
a
of
lot
technology.
Of time
yep.
out cutting wood or driving. I mean, I do have to move.
You're about
snow.
To graduate, though, aren't you?
I got another year.
Another year, yeah, and then back to stupid.
It does reset the stupid clock. It really does. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Not even a paper cut, huh?
yeah, no.
You don't even use paper. You do not use paper in your studies.
That's exactly right.
You
actually,
you...
I'm one of the guys, I kind of like having an actual textbook.
Uh-huh.
I don't like the online PDF the online books. I just don't like them. You know, you know how it is. You like to kind of kick back in a chair. You throw
but
it
you're
up
gonna,
there.
And... You're going to get it's a master's in business administration.
It's no, I'm not doing MBA. I'm doing technology management, engineering technology management.
Engineering
technology management.
Got it. Now, do you take paper to class? Do you?
I don't go to class. It's internet.
It's all internet.
It's 100%
Did
internet.
You buy any paper? You said,
no.
All right, I am about to pursue an advanced degree. Maybe I should get me some paper.
I didn't buy a pencil.
Not even a number three?
Dude, there was no school shopping for this dude.
I just love it.
We didn't go school shopping.
No. Oh, you know, and I was thinking about that because, do you know, the guy that invented the Texas Instruments calculator died probably about a month ago.
Wow.
And I was, you know, when I started college, I had a slide rule. I had one of those. I had a holster.
Because you're
and
really
a slide
old.
Because I'm really old. Yeah. I mean, that's the way you would use Avogadro's number to determine how much a mole of a element.
Yeah,
was.
Now you're just fishing for terms. Get you some pie. See, I focused on pie.
but I did know how to use the slide rule. And it was the way, you know, when we started, I was a physics chemistry major.
AKA an abacus.
And those early chemistry and physics problems, you had to use the slide rule to get the answer.
Actually, no. Yeah, slide rule. But the slide rule is more geometry, isn't it?
No, slide rule is, it was
all math, huh?
Yeah, it has these numbers that are put in logarithmic ratios, so when you slide across the other, and then you put your the red bar right there, you look up and you can get the answer to exponential problems, to multiplication, division, all sorts of things.
It's pretty funny. I'm 50, but still I grew up in a calculator era. I mean, the Texas Instruments,
this was a long time ago.
The TI was actually the one with the little red LEDs that lit up. I mean, that guy was mainstream when I was in school.
Right. And so I will tell you, I started as a freshman with a slide rule, and I think I certainly finished with a calculator, and I think around my junior year, I didn't have a whole lot of money, but I think even I bought a calculator for a class in my junior year. But I also had reams and reams of paper. I took a lot of notes. And
see,
you
here's the thing.
Have been through all your education without paper.
Yeah, I don't – you know, I say what you will. I don't go hear much on the radio, but – God bless me with a pretty decent memory. If I read it, if I see it, if I hear it, unless it's your name or your, you know, I pretty much am able to recall it. And so it's been a blessing. So I don't have to take a lot of notes yet.
No, you're not going to get tetanus from your paper, that's for sure.
See how all that, just a rusty nail started all that.
I know.
That's how bad we are.
That's ridiculous. That's what it is. MIT Technology Review annual list of breakthrough technologies Bill Gates curated this year's, and it was published Friday, March 8th. Got a couple of things that I thought were these are healthcare technologies to watch in 2019, and of course it's Bill Gates, so they're not what you would think they would be, but still a couple of them I think are interesting. Seven technologies by Mr. Gates. First of all, Stanford University bioengineer Stephen Quake, an engineer named Quake in California. Ironic, but we'll go past that. A $10 blood test that identifies women who are likely to deliver their baby prematurely. And that obviously would be a very, very useful insight.
OB is extremely high risk. I mean, this would obviously take and get the put the patient in an environment where they can deal with the high risk.
We have our maternal mortality is high. Our infant mortality is high. We are way off the curve for developed nations in what's happened around the labor room and labor and delivery room. So this would be an important advance. Guillermo Tierney, MD, PhD professor at Harvard and a physicist and pathologist, developed a probe that can be swallowed and used to screen for environmental enteric dysfunction. A disease that causes poor nutrient absorption, common in poor countries. It could help replace endoscopes, which are expensive. And this would be, I would be very enthusiastic about replacing endoscopes. These are the colonoscopes and the upper endoscope that they use to look in your stomach. You have to schedule these things. You have to not eat for a long time. You have to prepare your bowels and so forth. And if you could do that on your own time rather than having to show up at a certain time and be medicated and so forth, it would be a big advance. And you think to yourself, this is going to happen. We are not going to keep having people insert these scopes at a healthcare facility if we could do it at home. This is one of those do-it-yourself things that's really going to happen. It's a camera, Rick.
Okay, great. But it's a camera you got to swallow.
Yeah.
You know, I know people who don't like pills.
I'm saying this camera is going to be probably smaller than a pill or the same size as a pill anyway.
Maybe.
Yeah, you don't have to. It's not going to be big as a.
I mean, there are things in this world I want to see, and there are things in this world I don't want to see. The path in which my hamburger takes is one of them.
Well, you don't have to look at it. You can pay somebody to look at it. I don't want to have to show up in some doctor's office to get it done. I'd rather do it at home. Startup BioNTech and Genentech are conducting clinical trials on a cancer vaccine. And this has been very frustrating. Cancer cells are very, very close to normal cells. They just don't stop growing. And so it's been hard to target them. But they do have a few unique, we call them tumor markers. And so if we can develop a vaccine that goes and latches onto those things and kills the cells that display them, we might be able to selectively kill a cancer cell without doing so much damage to the cells around it. It would be a good thing. Number four, David Keith, climate scientist at Harvard, piloting ways to capture carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, use it to create synthetic fuels, reduce greenhouse gases, slow climate change. Rick, I am very, very firmly convinced that climate change is happening.
Of course.
I don't know the drivers of it, but I'm very, very firmly convinced. Yeah, but we could slow it down.
But honestly, hasn't climate change been a cyclic thing with our world for billions of years?
It has.
I mean, it has
so,
been.
So the idea that it would somehow freeze is silly. The question is, you know, well, how fast and can we have any say-so?
Of course. And there's no question that the burning of fossil fuels, industrialization, I mean, there's all kinds of things you can absolutely believe are obviously either speeding up or slowing down some process that is having an impact on our world. I don't think there's any question. And matter of fact, sometimes I'm kind of ashamed of people who suggest that, you know, the whole global warming. I mean, there is something going on. Now, whether we fully understand it or not still remains to be seen. But to just shake it off and say, you know, that's not happening at all. That's, you know, it's kind of, what would you say, nearsighted?
Yeah, I think.
Short-sighted?
I think short-sighted, and again, if we had the ability to even dent it a little bit, I think it would make sense to
I think this is an interesting thing to go get, you know, try to
capture carbon dioxide.
Yeah, as a way to make synthetic fuels. I mean, I think that's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Number five, which I guess shouldn't surprise anyone, the Apple Watch. The watch that can detect atrial fibrillation and other irregular heart rhythms and now has an EKG feature. And I really think this is going to be a game changer because right now you have to pay your healthcare provider hundreds of dollars to hook up a monitor for 24 hours to look at your heart rhythm. And these things, you can look at your heart rhythm anytime you want to. And I think it's really going to change the game.
It'll be interesting to see because you're only going to look at it a certain way, right? So electrically, you're going to be looking at it through what it detects through your arm. And so I don't know. I think most of the electrical medicine that's happened has happened in a different – it's been looking at the voltages as they went a different way.
Right.
And so I think it'll take some adaptation.
When we put the monitor on, you may remember, they tape wires all over the front of your chest exactly. So they can look at the heart from several different angles by comparing the voltages across different wires. Obviously, this watch only has a limited capability. But for rhythm analysis, I think it'll be good enough. Or we'll get a vest. That's the other thing. I can see a health vest in the future.
Absolutely.
And
or two watches.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a watch and a bracelet.
And a necklace.
And a necklace. Done. Checkmate.
Whoa, man. There we go.
Hey, an ankle bracelet.
Ah.
Done. Over. Sold.
That's already
Let's
been
patent that really quick.
That's right. Number six, two models of energy-efficient toilets can treat waste locally rather than using water. If you think about it, right now, the way we treat waste is we flush it and push it across town, across the county, and then treat it. Why not treat it locally? and save a lot of water and a lot of energy. And then finally, voice-enabled artificial intelligence assistants like Amazon's Alexa. I will tell you, I will never see this in my practice. I'm firmly convinced I really won't see this in my practice. But, Rick, what they're doing at Vanderbilt right now with those voice assistants, integrating them into the electronic medical record. So I'm examining you, and I just yell out, when did Rick have his last colonoscopy? What's his potassium level? Can you make an appointment with the orthopedist for Rick? Get him back to see me in 3 months. Refill his prescriptions. And I can do that while you and I are interacting, and I don't have to go type. As soon as I stop typing, I'm going to be a better doctor.
I completely agree with that, and I think you're going to see this is speech recognition technology has evolved in the last 15 years, and it is absolutely amazing, and it's only going to get better. I mean, just the things that I can do in my home are impressive, right? So, it's only a matter of time before they teach Alexa the full medical lingo, and I mean, and they probably have it now, to be honest. The augmentation and the automation that you need as a physician to help you get through that clunky electronic medical record is absolutely going to be available.
It'll be too late for me, but I think I will as a patient, I will probably see it, if not as a provider. But we've got to get rid of the keyboard. It is absolutely
Alexa,
just killing
it's us. Time for a break.
We're going to take a break, and so should you. Stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Splendid Periodic Table Show. We are celebrating, as we mentioned last time, the 150th anniversary of Dmitri Mendeleev, a Siberian chemist, a professor at the at St. Petersburg, who for his textbook of medicine, he was writing a textbook, I'm sorry, of chemistry. And in a dream, he envisioned the periodic table. And there were other people who also were working on a periodic table. There were several scientists who had this idea, but he felt he was the one that actually publicized it. He was involved in the first oil refinery in Russia. He brought the metric system to Russia, or encouraged the use of metric system in Russia. He was one vote short of winning a Nobel Prize. It turns out he had some of the members of the committee had grudges against him, and the committee recommended, their advisory committee recommended he get the Nobel Prize. It should have been a rubber stamp, but instead he faced active opposition, and an alternative candidate was actually voted in for the Nobel Prize that year by one vote.
But let's be honest, Tony. This dude does sound like he was a little bit too smart for his britches.
Oh, he... Yeah, he was a bright guy, and he was this.
I mean, did you ever want that guy to win?
He was this tempestuous guy. I told you on the way over here. He was married, and he was a professor at in this university at St. Petersburg, and he fell in love with this other woman, and he actually married her a month before he was divorced. He was a bigamist for a month.
I'm telling you, he sounds too smart for his britches.
I don't know. And that is not smart. Now that is
well, I mean, depending. Yeah, you're right. It's
that
not.
That is the definition of not smart. That and stepping on a nail.
You know, maybe the other gal was the one vote.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, no, it was. He was apparently equally tempestuous in his relationships with other scientists. So there was a person, a Swedish chemist, Arrhenius, who blocked him twice.
Nice.
Legend has it. I mean, I am.
You're going
now,
back 150 years.
I'm the National Enquirer.
You're going
of,
back 150
table.
Years here, right? I mean, you know.
I just know what I read. That is our that is our title.
Are you the Highlander? Is that what you are? Are you
periodic
the
table. I love history. You know that. I mean, this it, just the idea of
do you
these
have like
that,
swords at your house?
No, I don't like weapons, but I love history. That's a good thing.
Did you ever see the movie The Highlander?
I did. I know
yeah,
it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm also a movie buff. Seven Tips for Your Healthy Bones, sponsored by Calcium, the alkaline earth metal with an atomic number of 20, atomic weight of 40.078. Seven tips from the Cleveland Clinic on how to increase your calcium. Number one, eat lots of vegetables, especially greens and yellows. That gives you vitamin C. Vitamin C helps the bone cells to store calcium. Number two, perform strength training. That is weightlifting, resistance training, or bone loading, says Christopher Travers, who's an exercise physiologist. And he tells you to do one or two sets of 10 to 12 reps, working to muscle fatigue. I tell you, look, just lift some weights. Because
you can
most
get
of
muscle
us,
fatigue all kinds of ways.
Oh, I get muscle fatigue very easy.
You can get muscle
pretty much
fatigue
muscle
easily.
Fatigue while we're sitting here. Number three, add D to your day. Absorb calcium. You need 1,000 to 2,000 international units of vitamin D. If you are north of Atlanta, you will not get enough vitamin D from the sun. Vitamin D supplement will help you meet your daily needs. Number four, start weight-bearing exercises. Weight-bearing exercises are things like running, jogging, high-impact aerobic, stair climbing, dancing, and tennis or
so
basketball.
So sleeping's not.
No, it's really not. And for most of my patients with arthritis, this is going to be very difficult. But if you are young, do this to build the bones up.
So that you can sit back and watch movies later.
Right. Number five, don't smoke and don't drink excessively.
Don't smoke excessively or don't?
Nope, they excessively modifies drink in this sentence structure. So, I'm diagramming the sentence.
When they say don't drink excessively, are they implying that you're talking absolutely about alcoholic drinks, or are they just saying don't do root beer?
Once again, it's alcohol. And once again, we will remind our radio fans, according to the American Cancer Society, there is no lower limit for the increase of risk of alcohol and cancer. I cannot tell you that there's a safe level to drink. So if we're going to advise you, I mean, sure, if you want to, if you enjoy alcohol, then you enjoy alcohol. But I don't think that I am honest with you if I advise you not to drink excessively. I've got to tell you, don't drink. And then if you want to drink, I understand that. But the best thing for your bones and your health is not to drink.
But so many people will ignore you that we have to say excessive.
Don't drink excessively.
And that's because we're trying to make sure the masses hear us and not just the people who listen to you.
I resent that. I'm not sure what it means, but I still resent it. Number six, get your bone mineral density tested. A snapshot of your bone health, measuring your bone density with a DEXA scan. Recommended women tested within 2 years of menopause. Men, they don't know. I mean, if you're a man and you've been on a lot of prednisone or you have other things that might have affected your bone density, you can talk to your physician about that. But routine testing of men is not recommended.
It's just hard to differentiate between what's bone density and what's stupid.
Yeah, it's true. Consider medication, and I'll leave it at that. They talked about hormone therapy, but really the bisphosphonates, this is the Fosamax, the Boniva, these are the bisphosphonates, and they are really the cornerstone right now of our efforts at fighting postmenopausal osteoporosis. That's our seven tips for health, sponsored by Calcium, one of the alkaline earth metals in the periodic table. Now, Rick, walking the dog seems like a good idea.
Sure. Yeah. So they didn't pee in the house.
Yep. Washington Post, March 6th. Dog walking can be risky. Increase rates of bone fractures. And keep in mind, we've been talking about calcium in bones. Nearly 8 in 10 who suffered fractures were women. Most commonly broken bones, hips, wrists, and upper arms.
A smaller dog.
Yeah. The rates of fracture more than double among U.S. residents 65 and older, and 8 in 10 were women. Dog walking fractures first reported by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. The number increased from 1,600 and change in 2004 to 4,400 in 2017, a higher rate than the number of overall fractures. So there are more senior citizens. They are more physically active. But they apparently are also walking dogs. The dogs tangle up on the leash. The dog sees a squirrel. Whatever reason, they're getting jerked around by the dogs, and they are fracturing bones.
Doesn't happen to you, does it?
We have a farm. We let the dogs run. The one thing the dogs do is when something exciting happens, they run and they sit at our feet. So I've had situations where I was about to take off and do something because there was an emergency and I tripped over a dog.
I can see that.
Yeah. There's one. I have a white dog that has a very annoying habit of camping out around your feet. And not a loving dog. She just wants to be fed. That's it. It's not. There's no.
Pretty much
no
every love. Time she's around.
Yeah, she will look to see, you know, what are you eating. If you come in with a plastic bag, she'll sniff it to see if it's food. She would just walk up beside you, and she'll put her nose in the plastic bag and sniff it.
Nice.
Yeah. This is a well-trained dog, as you can tell. But
you did your best.
Yeah. But you think about, you know, we're, as healthcare providers, we say, well, a dog is good for your emotional health. A dog will provide you with companionship. Certainly, a lot of my widowed patients use the dog as a family member. For
of course.
A senior citizen, this dog is in many cases, means more to them than their children who have moved away. They can produce fractures when you walk them out on a leash. You have to be aware of that.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense.
Now, let's say you did. Let's say you didn't have a fracture. You didn't break anything, but let's say you sprained your ankle. The appropriate treatment for a sprained ankle, Rick?
Ice.
Absolutely. RICE, we call it. Rest, ice, compression, elevation. So you rest. You don't put your weight on the ankle. You put a wrap around it to compress it, keep it from swelling so much. You use ice to reduce the inflammation, and you elevate it to help drain it. The thing about it is the ice does reduce inflammation, but inflammation is an important part of healing.
See, I would supplement your little RICE with some ibuprofen.
Sure. That's a fine thing as well.
Because that's going to help me with that inflammation.
Yeah, unless you're me and you're in your 60s, and then you have to worry about the risk of heart disease with ibuprofen. But it does raise your
I'm
risk
of heart
disease.
I'm not so much worried about that for you.
I know. You're not at all worried about that for me. This is Andrew Hahn writing for the Washington Post. A 2008 analysis of research papers found insufficient evidence that icing did any good. And a 2012 paper found it's largely based on anecdotal evidence. The evidence from a control trial where we iced half the people's feet or ankles and didn't ice the other half, we don't have that evidence. The guy who coined the term RICE was a family medicine doctor, I think family medicine, named Gabe Merkin. He said he doesn't recommend it anymore. If ice makes you feel better, that's okay. But ice does not promote healing. In fact, it delays healing
right.
a little bit, and we don't need to ice. So I've had some of my patients that the ice hurts, you know,
right.
that the cold hurts, and they say, yeah, but I know I need to do it.
No, you don't.
No, you really don't. If you sprain your ankle or whatever, you don't have to put ice on.
I mean, isn't it extremely important, A, to put the compression on and to elevate? I mean, elevation to me... I mean, because let's be honest, inflammation is fluid, right? I mean, that's
it produces fluid.
And if you elevate that foot or that ankle above your heart, then the fluid is not going to, gravity is going to help you with some of that fluid, right?
Yeah. And so that makes sense. And as Rick said, an anti-inflammatory medicine, once again, you know, inflammation is the key to
Did
healing.
Did you just say I made sense?
Yeah, about to qualify that, so don't get your.
I brought smart water today.
Yeah. tell me why you got smart water.
Because the bottle's huge.
Yeah, I know. This is
an
enormous
reason.
Bottle. I mean,
that's the only reason. You know, Tony, spending an excessive amount of time in the studio.
Right, right.
And so I needed more than just a simple little thing of whatever it is you got there.
Yeah, sure. I got some green
tea. Little tiny green tea.
Yeah. So Rick has got an enormous vat of smart water. Now, I assume that you could have got some stupid water for maybe half price.
No, the same size bottle, you can get life water, but I chose smart over life.
Regular Solomon. All right. So when we departed from medical conversation, Rick was talking about using an anti-inflammatory medicine like ibuprofen or Aleve. And the key to it is, though, inflammation is how your body heals. So you can reduce swelling with an anti-inflammatory. It may delay healing a little bit, probably not enough to make a difference. The same way with ice. Ice slows down the inflammatory process if you apply it acutely. A day, 2 days, 3 days after the event, it doesn't really have any effects at all. And what they're saying is even if you did it up front, you're really not. This is not essential to healing. So don't go through pain in order to apply ice. If it makes things feel better, that's perfectly fine.
So the fact is you twist your ankle. You're just down for a couple of days.
Right.
You're down with your leg up. You're down with your leg up. That's what it is.
Yep. And so at that point, we knock out the I, and we got RCE, rest, compression, elevation, which is not nearly as. We got Rick.
Oh, hey, here we go.
Anyway.
Because I is ibuprofen now.
Yeah.
Right?
No. I'm not going to give you that. All right, next up, this will make you very happy. American Journal of Medicine, March 8th, 2019. A controlled trial, 983 people over age 18 studied to investigate the influence of vegan diets on blood pressure.
Oh,
they could
gosh.
Not find a significant impact of a vegan diet on blood pressure versus a less restrictive diet. There was, it does reduce your blood pressure, but so do less restrictive diets. As a matter of fact, if you look at the, they call it the DASH, the Dietary Approach to Stop Hypertension Diet, the Mediterranean Diet, those diets have basically the same effect on your blood pressure as vegan. So this, take that, vegans.
You should have had the steak.
Yeah, it does not necessarily produce a greater change. I mean,
you know, the thing, Tony, the one thing is I get older, and I love red meat, right? I've always loved steak and beef, but it's just the red meat's just, you know, chicken seems so much better, you know? And so, I mean, I get the idea of the whole vegan thing, but, I mean, a good you know, chicken is not terrible for you.
Well, it is tough. I have one patient who's...
Yeah, it is if you lather it in batter.
Yeah, she is from an area in Asia, and so her diet is mainly rice. She does eat fish, and we are trying to increase her protein, and rice is simply not a source of protein.
Absolutely.
And so we've struggled a little bit because she doesn't really do a lot of dairy products, and so we don't have red meats. We don't have chicken. We've only got fish, and we said, okay, well, we're going to try to really push the fish, and she's now has some interest in eggs, which has been beneficial as well. But it does get very, very difficult as you get older to get the protein you need without using meat. I say that. I think in general, a vegetarian diet is probably better for the planet, although some of the things I've read say that we probably, I mean, we can't sustain our current agricultural production.
If we were all just vegetarians.
Yeah, yeah, it really doesn't matter. I mean, certainly that's not an argument to let cattle graze, but by the same token, it's not we would be able to switch over to sustainability by going with all vegetarian crops.
So I'm pretty sure I'm going to offend, you know, some little group down there in Florida, but can we just agree it's not grapefruit?
It's definitely not grapefruit. That is not going to save the world.
I would lose so much weight if all I could eat was grapefruit.
Well, you could go on a grapefruit diet. You know that.
I mean, yeah. But the thing is, I just assume you take them and throw them at me.
Which that would be a fine grapefruit diet. You know, just basically every time you're thinking about food, I'll throw a grapefruit. And if you catch it, that's fine. You can eat the grapefruit. You are going to lose a ton of weight.
Instead of eating it, I'd rather just let it hit me and deal with the pain for a second.
So there are vegans, but then there are grapefruit people, and I'm placing the grapefruit people lower than the vegans.
We're sorry, Grapefruit Association. You have a good fruit. We love you. Please don't call the president.
Please, I don't even like it. All right. This was February 15th, and I just something wild. This takes me... it makes me think
minute.
Of how messy
you get. Right, one minute.
I got it. All right, good. February 15th. Nick Mulcahy wrote this in Medscape Medical News. In China, Pfizer will reimburse up to 33% of the cost of its breast cancer drug Ibrance. Now, Ibrance has been on TV. This is a very, very expensive, but it's a pretty darn good drug for breast cancer. If the patient's disease progresses within 4 months of taking the drug, they'll pay you back a third of the cost of the drug. They will give you your money back if your cancer progresses.
I mean, is that good?
I think it's interesting. What if you say your blood pressure drug doesn't control your blood pressure?
Or what do they do with Cialis? What do they do with Cialis?
I need photographic evidence, buddy. We're not taking anybody's word here. Okay. Money back arrangement, part of the company's patient to benefit management program for those with breast cancer. But this is in China. I stress this is not worldwide. It is not. They're not planning on doing it in the United States.
That's never going to
They, oddly enough, they said the program reflects Pfizer's active undertaking of its corporate social duties, which apparently exist in China but not anywhere else. The deal is not available in the U.S. The company will use learnings and feedback from that to consider other markets. The Ibrance, $12,900 for 21 capsules. Let me say that again, $12,900 for 21 capsules. So we're talking about $4,000 bucks and change back.
Right.
If, in fact, it doesn't work.
I mean, don't get me wrong, that's a good thing, but I mean, I think people, the fact that you're not
responding well, and you're going to end up with breast cancer.
I am skeptical.
That's just a tough place to be.
Get us off the air, Rick.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters drugs and do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.